Whenever I get gloomy with the state of the world, I think about the arrivals at Heathrow Airport. General opinion is starting to make out that we live in a world of hatred and greed, but I don't see that. It seems to me that love is everywhere. Often it's not particularly dignified or newsworthy, but it's always there. Fathers and sons, mothers and daughters, husbands and wives, boyfriends, girlfriends, old friends. When the planes hit the Twin Towers, as far as I know, none of the phone calls from people on board were of hatred or revenge. They were messages of love. If you look for it, I've got a sneaky feeling that you will find that love actually is all around. Okay, that was corny and was the opening monologue of the British actor Hugh Grant from a 2005 romantic comedy Christmas movie of doubtful credibility. I'm not recommending it, but it was funny. But sentimentally, I've always liked it, and I'm kind of a sucker for sentiment, especially on Mother's Day. And I like this, too, from the mouths of babes. A group of professional people posed this question to a group of four to eight-year-olds. What does love mean? Here is Rebecca, age 8. When my grandmother got arthritis, she couldn't bend over and paint her toenails anymore, so my grandfather does it for her all the time, even when his hands got arthritis, too. That's love. Billy, age 4. When someone loves you, the way they say your name is different. You just know that their name is safe in their mouth. Carl, 5, says, love is when a girl puts on perfume and a boy puts on shaving cologne and they go out and smell each other. Chrissy, who's 6, says, love is when you go out to eat and give somebody most of your French fries without making them give you any of theirs. Terry, 4, says, love is what makes you smile when you're tired. Emily says, at age 8, love is when you kiss all the time. Then when you get tired of kissing, you still want to be together and you talk more. My mommy and daddy are like that. They look gross when they kiss. And this is kind of a wow one. Bobby, 7, says, love is what's in the room with you at Christmas if you stop opening presents and listen. And here's what we need a lot more of. Nika says, at 6, if you want to learn to love better, you should start with a friend who you hate. Noel, 7, says, love is when you tell a guy you like his shirt, and then he wears it every day. Love is like a little old woman and a little old man who are still friends even after they know each other so well. Tommy, 6. Claire, 6, says, my mommy loves me more than anybody. You don't see anyone else kissing me to sleep at night. Chris, 7, says, love is when mommy sees daddy smelly and sweaty and still says he is handsomer than Brad Pitt. Marianne, 4, love is when your puppy licks your face even after you left him all alone all day long. Lauren, 4, says, I know my older sister loves me because she gives me all her old clothes and has to go out and buy new ones. And this is really cute. When you love somebody, your eyelashes go up and down and little stars come out of you. Karen, 7. You really shouldn't say I love you unless you mean it, but if you mean it, you should say it a lot. People forget. And this last one. Author and lecturer Leo Biscaglia once talked about a contest he was asked to judge. The purpose of the contest was to find the most caring child. The winner was a 4-year-old child whose neighbor next door was an elderly gentleman who had recently lost his wife. Upon seeing the man cry, the little boy went into the old gentleman's yard, climbed up onto his lap, and just sat there. When his mother asked what he had said to the neighbor, the little boy said, nothing. I just helped him cry. That is love, isn't it? Well, if you can stand just one more. The Shirelles were the first to sing it in the late 50s or maybe early 60s. The Mamas and the Papas are the ones I remember singing it. And then Linda Ronstadt did it again in 1996. Each night before you go to bed, my baby, whisper a little prayer for me, my baby, and tell all the stars above, what? This is dedicated to the one I love. And at that particular age, I thought I was always in love with some cheerleader or twirler or this girl or that, and I listen to it on my transistor or my little bedside radio all the time. I wonder how many songs have been sung about love, how many books written, poems recited, how much theater performed. It's the universal theme, the thread that runs through the human experience. It is the quest that drives life from cradle to grave. To be sure, love can be twisted and misshapen. It often is. What presents itself as love can be nothing more than self-centered manipulation. We have the capacity to pervert anything. And the more possibility something has for good, the higher is its potential for distortion. But the human spirit also has the capacity to love and to be loved. That love has the power to draw us to something beyond our ordinary selves, and some of us call that nobility. The author of the Epistle of John says, God is love. I think it's significant that it doesn't say God loves, as if love is but one more attribute of God, something that God does some of the time. But it says God is love. Love is the fundamental nature of God. It is why we yearn so for the fulfillment, the completion that we glimpse in moments of love. We are created in the image and likeness of God. Therefore, we want to be loved and want to love. God is essentially relational. We have the possibility of encountering God in relationship. That's why Christianity is, at its very center, a communal faith. We grow in love because we love. Faith pushes us out of ourselves, and reaching beyond ourselves strengthens faith. That's why we worship. That's why worship isn't necessarily a corporate act. It's why we go to church. I look down here on this large group of seniors who are going to be spoken of this morning, and parents and loved ones with them, and I am reminded that it was in high school, my junior, senior year, that I really did find my own faith. And I found it in church. I found those who kept going to church to be the ones who really became my deepest and dearest friends, even to this day. And because I went to church and kept going to church through my college years and then to my adult years, that I think maybe that's why I stand before you today. Love is just risky business, isn't it? That's why worship is necessarily a corporate act. We know, we of all people should know that, for the one we call Lord and seek to follow was crucified. Love and vulnerability go hand in hand. To open oneself to love is to risk hurt. The irony is that the only two choices we really have are to live in the vulnerability of love or not really live at all. The tragedy is that we also have the ability to protect ourselves, to close our hearts. It's an odd thing about love. It's a perishable commodity. Without attention and nurture, love withers and fades, at least for those of us who live this side of God's kingdom. The risk diminishes, and so does life. It is easy to get out of the habit of going to church. There's no need. 1 week leads to the next, and it loses any sense of urgency. Nothing is demanded of us. Nothing is required. There is no need to extend ourselves or to open our hearts and minds. There's no need to give, no need to sacrifice much, no need to lay down one's life. But Jesus calls us to a kind of summary of the truly Christian life and to our destiny. He says, "Abide in my love. Love one another as I have loved you. Lay down one's life for one's friends. I am giving these commands so that you may love one another." He even said on another occasion, "Love your enemies." Try that on. In these words, we can express the fundamental decision of our life. Being Christian is not the result of an ethical choice or a lofty idea, and certainly not saccharine sentimentality, but the encounter with an event, a person, which gives life a new horizon and a decisive direction. St. John's Gospel describes that event, that person, in these words: "God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, that whoever believes in him should have eternal life." When we acknowledge and act on the centrality of love, Christian faith retains the core of Israel's faith, but at the same time giving it new depth and new breadth. The pious Jew prayed daily the words of the book of Deuteronomy, which express the heart of his existence. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your might. Jesus united into a single precept this commandment of love for God and the commandment of love for neighbor found in the book of Leviticus. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Since God has first loved us, love is now no longer a command. It is the response to the gift of love with which God draws near to us, to abide with us, and we in Him. When I was just your age, thereabouts, we had a youth director. We were blessed with a youth director in my church, just as you are in this church, who took us on a retreat, and these guys around a blazing campfire out in the woods were talking and just asking questions, and then our leader began to talk about faith and staying in church and what we were going to do with our lives and what it would be like if we stopped going to church. And he just took a shovel and pulled out a big lump of the coal from the logs and put it over in the sand, kept talking. And pretty soon we all glanced over there with the fire roaring over here. This large lump of blazing, a few moments later, had become just an ashen, cold heap. The visual wasn't lost on us. Once the coal is separated from the fire, it gets cold and it dies. Like the old blacksmith who says who has a roaring fire and he sticks the iron in it, and the iron is in the fire, and then when he pulls it out, the fire is in the iron. That's what love is with Christ, abiding in Him in the fire, so that when we pull it out and need to go somewhere, the fire is in, the iron is in us. I like C.S. Lewis, and I close with this. This is what he has had to say about love, part of it. There is no safe investment. To love at all is to be vulnerable. Love anything, and your heart will certainly be wrung and possibly broken. If you want to make sure of keeping it intact, you must give your heart to no one, not even an animal. Wrap it carefully round with hobbies and little luxuries. Avoid all entanglements. Lock it up safe in the casket or coffin of your selfishness. But in that casket, safe, dark, motionless, airless, it will change. It will not be broken. It will become unbreakable, irredeemable, impenetrable. The alternative to tragedy, or at least to the risk of tragedy, is damnation. The only place outside heaven where you can be perfectly safe from all the dangers and perturbations of love is hell.